Greens couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Neil Miller, and you're listening to Fat Guys, the Movies, and we are back from vacation.
Yes, yes, I had a great vacation. I went to Hilton Head Island. I saw
dolphins.
Oh,
that's right, you were on vacation. I'm still on vacation.
Well, yeah, a vacation from nerdiness, I guess.
Right, well, I'm not really on vacation. If I sound any different, that's because I'm coming from an undisclosed location somewhere in the nation's capital.
Yes.
It's like I'm reenacting a National Treasure, and I've grown a mullet in celebration of that.
And you're like breaking into the White House trying to steal
a diary. I tried the other day, it didn't work out so well. Although I did blog from the Pentagon the other day. It was kind of fun.
Yeah, you know, I saw that on your like Facebook update or on Twitter, and I was like, that's just disturbing that you... They would just let you into the Pentagon.
Yeah. Well, I mean...
Did they attack you? Did they care?
No, I just flashed my press credentials. I was like, I'm press. You know, obviously you need to know who I am. And they let me in. It
so,
works
like, somebody
everywhere,
from, like,
dude.
So like somebody from Dog Fancy can show up and be like, I'm from the press. I'm from Dog Fancy. I need in the Pentagon right now.
Yeah, I would urge everyone to try that and see what happens.
I'll give that a shot. It's amazing the power you can wield with press. That's what I don't pay for entertainment anymore. They come to me.
Yeah, no, press. It's freedom of the press.
Yes. I was out of town for the last week on a family vacation. We went to Hilton Head, which is a great place. Have you ever been to Hilton Head?
Hilton Head, no.
It's an island off. It's a barrier island off the coast of South Carolina. And it was very, very hot, but it's beautiful. I got some sun. I got some tan, which is good because I'm going to start doing TV stuff this week as well, which is a big announcement for Fat Guys at the Movies. Going to be doing regular television appearances on WTTE Fox 28 in Columbus, Ohio. So watch for me there.
Oh, yeah, nice. That's right. You're going to be doing stuff on TV. You're the new televangelist film critic.
If you want to call me that, sure.
Spreading the church of Kevin all over the television.
And the funniest thing, it's you know, of course, it's regular, it's morning news, and it's mainstream, so it's you got to be very safe. What's the first movie I'm going to be reviewing? Bruno. This is not, I mean, you want to start with, like, Race to Witch Mountain as your first movie to review, but no, it's Bruno, which you really can't even talk about that movie in polite company.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, why don't you give us the how to get a hold of us before we get started?
Oh, right, that. I don't know. Man, we've been off for a week, so I keep forgetting stuff like that. But anyways, if you'd like to get a hold of us, get us over at fatguysthemovies.com. You can get us on iTunes. Just go to iTunes, search Fat Guys the Movies, and listen to us, subscribe to us, review us. I love those reviews. You can email us, fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com, or leave us a voicemail, 614-388-8735. That's 614-388-8735. I just want to be clear about that phone number because it doesn't seem like anybody knows it.
Yeah. Well, and also, if you want to get a hold of me, you can go to facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies and follow my obnoxious updates. You can also follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr. If you're already following /rejects.
Slash rejects. That's me on Twitter.
Yay.
Yay.
So,
anyways.
Shall we start?
Yeah, what are we talking about this week there, Mr. Carr?
I think the first movie, and this is just simply because I'm from Columbus, and this is opening in Columbus. It opened in limited release a couple weeks ago, and I believe you saw it at Sundance or one of the film festivals.
Yeah, I saw it a long time ago. I don't even remember this movie.
This is Moon. Sam Rockwell is alone in space with Sam Rockwell.
2 weeks to go, Sam.
2 weeks to go, buddy.
I'm going home.
Looks like we got a live one.
I'm going to go out.
Okay, Sam.
Leaving Sarang working perimeter.
Send him outside. Who is he? You tell me who that is!
Perhaps you're imagining things.
What's going on?
Where did he come from? Why does he look like me?
So, did you want to take first crack at this? Do you even remember this movie? You talked about it on Reject Radio a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, we talked about it on Reject Radio, and really it's, I mean, from what I remember, I really need to go see it again. In fact, I'm going to try and take the lady and drag her to go see it.
You're going to bring your old lady? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm bring my old lady. But first of all, it's an interesting little character piece about a guy who, you know, what would you do if you met yourself kind of deal?
He discovers himself, we could
He discovers himself, literally. And I thought, one, it's a very small indie. It was directed by Duncan Jones, who is formerly known as Zoe Bowie, David Bowie's son.
Wow. Ooh, what, wow.
You didn't know that?
I did not know that.
And, you know, and he's got this very cool vision. It's his directorial debut, and it was made on the cheap, and it was done with a lot of miniatures, and Clint Mansell creates a fantastic score for it.
Mm-hmm.
And Clint Mansell works a lot with Darren Aronofsky. And
yeah.
And I really felt like it, as a space movie, as this kind of isolation movie, as this piece about this character kind of slowly unraveling as he discovers what's going on around him, it's a really well-done story. It's a really tight story. And they get the visuals right. It has this retro feel to it, this retro space feel to it, almost as if it's a little homage to, like, 2001 a little bit, but it still has a little bit of grit.
It feels like it was, like, made in the late 70s, early 80s. It looks like it was shot on the same sets as, like, Alien.
Right. It has a very Alien look to it. Yeah. And I tell you, they pull off a really awesome-looking film on a very, very, very small budget. And I thought, you know, it's a really excellent example of a filmmaker who has a very unique vision for a film and who carries that vision out to its fullest potential.
Yeah.
And we don't see that, you know, like everybody talks about, like, style and visual style and stuff like that. And, you know, we talked about Transformers last time we were talking, and, you know, it's for me, I respect any director who makes the kind of movie that they really set out to make and they deliver on that. And that's why I sometimes like Michael Bay, because Michael Bay, like, sets out to make one kind of movie and always does it.
All right, Neil, you just completely you built this really esoteric and intellectual argument, and then the words Michael Bay were uttered, and you're just like,
and this, wait, hold on, said, oh, I can finish.
I love this dish. This is a gourmet meal with scallops and butter and everything. It's just like McDonald's.
But this is way better.
Yes.
Okay. Think about that, but, like, way better.
Here's the thing with Moon. I loved Moon. I thought it was fantastic. And what was neat about it is it reminded me of a lot of movies, like you said, 2001. But it also reminded me of movies, you know, like Alien. It reminded me of Sunshine with its sort of, like, isolation.
Sunshine's a great example.
It's a perfect example of not just science fiction, but speculative fiction, in which it takes something that's not doable today. It's not a situation that you could be in today, so it puts it in some sort of fantastic reality, and it does something fantastic with the characters, and it does so in such a way that it does give you a lot of contemplation and intellectual thought. It's not just some big, dumb, stupid movie like Michael Bay would make with giant robots blowing things up.
I'm just saying stylistically.
Okay, I assure
you. But you know what else it does? It ultimately makes an interesting commentary on, like, corporate ethics.
Yeah.
In the end, and it's not preachy or anything. I think there's one little bit at the end that gets a little out there.
It just tosses it out there, really. It doesn't hammer it home.
And it's one of those movies that, like, you get to the end, and this is what great sci-fi does. Great sci-fi will make you think about something every day, like, very real in your everyday world, but like in this fantastical context.
Like giant robots.
Like giant robots. All right, I take back the Michael Bay comment. Okay. But I give it a totally rocks. Moon totally rocks.
I give it a rocks as well. We agree on that. That's awesome. We won't agree with the other ones because I don't think we've all seen each what everybody else has seen.
Sure. And we're back on Fat Guys, the Movies. Now that we've gotten that movie out of the way, that is nothing like a Michael Bay film.
The serious movie.
It's time to move on to this week's films, and included in this week's films, two very sexually charged films.
Well, one sort of sexually charged, and one in a very disturbingly sexually charged way.
Yeah, see? Exactly. But first up is I Love You, Beth Cooper. And that is not a statement. That is actually the title of the film. I don't even know Beth Cooper. And it's about a nerdy valedictorian who professes his love for the prettiest, most popular girl in school on graduation day, and she later gives him a shot at the time of his life.
I would like to say here today the one thing I will regret if I never say. I love you, Beth Cooper. And yes, when I graduate, I'm not gonna keep hanging around my old high school like some kind of creepy loser who can't get an adult girlfriend.
You embarrassed me, but it was so sweet. I'll have to let you live.
And this is
now before we start, because neither of us has seen it
at time of recording. No, I believe you're gonna see it eventually. I'm never gonna
I'll
see,
I'll see
this
it.
Movie.
I'll see it by the time this actually most people can listen to this. I'll actually have seen it, so you can go to Fat Guys and get my review. But I had an opportunity to see it, but it was like I would have had to go to Cleveland to see it at like 10 in the morning, and I got home from driving all night from Hilton Head at like 5 in the morning.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to kill anybody by falling asleep at the wheel and crashing.
Nice.
So, okay. I opted to spend $9 and go see it at the midnight show.
Nice. What was I going to say about this movie?
You're going to talk about a non-news story that Cola Bias on Film School Rejects ranted about having to actually write.
This is really there's a nude scene in this movie, I guess? Question mark. I'm Ron Burgundy.
I think we should start it off. We should title, make a new term. Instead of a nude scene spelled N-O-O-D-E.
A nude.
So that people will know that it's a nude scene, which means there's really no nudity in it.
Yeah, I get you. Well, and I guess, there was a big deal on the internet about, like, Hayden Panettiere, who plays Beth Cooper, who plays the hottest girl in school. And I don't know, I mean, she's cute and all. And I like Heroes and whatnot, but...
She looks like she's 15.
But
that
right,
bothers me.
You know, she's no Olivia Newton-John.
Yeah, I mean, Michael Jackson's dead, so, you know, sort of like the young kids are no longer attractive to people.
Excellent. Thank you, Kevin Carr, for your words of wisdom, your appropriate words of wisdom. His body's not even cold, man.
It's been cold for decades, man. And you know that's why they're not burying him, and they're having trouble burying him because they got to get all the environmental. You can't just put toxic waste in the ground.
Wow. Oh, Kevin Carr.
And Hayden Panettiere's
once again, you've raised the bar.
Oh, you brought it down with the whole Michael Bay comment about Moon, so, I'm just following your lead. Go on, we got to have time to talk about Bruno, and I'll bring the situation back
you'll,
up.
You'll bring it back up. So I guess there's this nude scene that doesn't happen in the show, and there's, like, this big deal on the internet, and we're just like, whatever, man, who cares? She's not even nude, just see her back.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much the whole story. That's all I have to say about that. You know what? Here's the deal with this movie. It is based on a book... a book that I'm told is pretty solid. It's directed by Christopher Columbus, who's made some solid movies. He's also made some crap.
Chris Columbus, not the guy who discovered America.
Yeah, no, Chris Columbus, the guy who did Home Alone.
And the first two Harry Potter movies, and he comes onto this.
Right, so I imagine that this is going to be one of those like fun like movies for like 15-year-old girls.
Mm.
Maybe. Or 15-year-old boys. I'm not really
who
sure.
Who don't, I'm tired of talking about this. Sort of preemptive suck.
You're either into this movie and you're gonna go see it, or you're not. And either way, two fat dudes are not gonna change your mind. So, now something that we do know about is this next movie.
What's up? It's Bruno.
Inappropriate comedy.
Yes, this one is Sacha Baron Cohen dupes a bunch of celebrities and average people as a flamboyant, openly gay Austrian fashionista who comes to America to become famous.
Mm-hmm. What's up? I'm Bruno. Angelina's got fun. Madonna's got fun. Now Bruno's got fun.
Now our next guest is a single parent. Please welcome Bruno. What's so what's the baby's name?
I gave him like a traditional African name. OJ.
What? How did you find your son?
I swapped him.
You swapped him? Swapped
the baby for what?
For an iPod.
What?
Now, you haven't seen this yet, have you?
Mm-mm.
Did you get to see this? Didn't they show a teaser of it at Comic-Con or something?
No, they showed like 20 minutes of it at South by Southwest, and Rob Hunter from Film School Rejects went to see it, and he just laughed his took us off. That's right, I said took us. And
you went there.
So he said it was hysterical. We just posted our review. The guys in Austin, Landon and Cole Abias, got to see it, and they both said it was very funny. Although they said it was a little bit more political than Borat, because Borat was just kind of this wandering idiot. You know, Borat really didn't have anything to say other than, wow, look at how uncomfortable people get around this guy, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas this one actually kind of tries to say something about the way people, essentially about homophobia, I would guess.
Yeah, I don't know if it's trying to say something. See, this is the thing. I saw it. I didn't see it giving any sort of message.
Okay.
I just saw it as the exact same thing as Borat. It's just we take somebody, and if you watch the Bruno segments in the Dialy G show, it's the same deal. It's just like, let's take the most openly gay, crazy character we can and put him in the most uncomfortable situation. So he goes to like a swingers party, you know, and he goes to he goes hunting with some guys in the wilderness, and he goes to an army training facility. He goes to places that are going to be, let's just say, hotbeds of homophobia. You know, he tries to get coached out of being a homosexual by a former homosexual preacher, which is roaringly uncomfortable but hilarious.
Right.
And so I don't even know if he's trying to. I don't think he's trying to make a statement about anything. You can glean that off of it just because it so unabashedly goes after the homophobic sect.
Right.
But, you know, so I guess you can tie that to it. But otherwise, it's him doing things that are outrageous and uncomfortable and silly and crazy and just seeing what average people's reactions are. I mean, and here's the thing with it to compare it to Borat.
Mm-hmm.
Borat is like one of those, if you ever watch nature shows, and you see the crocodile that leaps out of the water and eats a water buffalo.
Okay.
That's what Borat was. It just kind of floated around and showed up, and then blah, came onto the screen, and nobody knew it was coming, and that's what Borat did. It came out of nowhere, flew in completely under the radar. This one, everybody knew it was coming, and does he dupe people? Absolutely. Does he dupe some celebrities? I think so. I'm not sure how much behind the scenes were known.
Right.
But it not to the degree of Borat, just because you can't do that again. You can't completely dupe people again because people were on the lookout for this. The same thing Michael Moore. Michael Moore will make a movie, and now if Michael Moore shows up to interview you, you know you're going to get ambushed.
Right.
So this one, it does have a little bit of a falseness to it. You can tell they've staged probably a little bit more, or it appears to have been staged more. But it goes after a different group, and it has some incredibly funny scenes, and it originally got an NC-17 rating. I was actually talking to the publicist from Cincinnati about this. It got an NC-17 rating, and they cut stuff out of it. And she even said to me, she's like, I can't believe it had an R rating.
Right.
And then I went and saw it, and I'm like, I agree with her. I can't believe that. I could buy it if they had submitted this and they'd sort of squeaked by with an R rating, but this was what they resubmitted to get an R rating.
This was try number two.
Yeah. I don't know how it did it, because there's just so much stuff in this movie you can't even talk about on the radio or television, and it makes it very uncomfortable for me to review this week. But what's really funny, and I think this is the best way to do it, this is the best way to describe it. It was a packed audience. I went to go see it. It was packed, and it was in a theater, probably like 400 or 500 people strong.
Mm-hmm.
30 people, a good almost 10% of the audience, walked out at some point.
Right.
In this movie, and just left. And at one point, there's a group of people that just left themselves because kind of like they were ordered to by the person they were with.
Right.
If you go to this movie and get offended, you deserve everything you get, because it's not like Borat, which was the crocodile jumping onto the water buffalo. It was, you know, that this is going to be incredibly offensive, and it bodes well for it that people got offended. It's not the movie to take your grandmother to. No, it is. Take your grandmother to it. I want to see what her reaction is.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not going to take my grandmother. I might take my mom. I'd take my mom to see this. I mean, I can't.
Your mom might
like
it.
She doesn't live in Austin or D.C. Yeah. or wherever I'm going to be.
This is not a first date movie, though.
Yeah, no, not a first date movie. Probably not a second date movie. I would just be in a secure relationship with whoever you're taking, even if it is your
grandmother. It could very well be a last date movie. It could be a last date movie really easily.
Hey, you know what? Do what you got to do, right? All right, give us a grade.
It rocks. I found it hilarious and awesome.
And inappropriate. Speaking of inappropriate,
which I love.
We'll be right back.
Miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck. 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. I'd like to let everybody know that I am fat. You call me fat. Yeah, it's funny because one of the guys I do radio with in Columbus, Dr. Smith on CD101, every time I walk in the studio, he's like, "Hey, fatty." And like one of the other girls on the morning show, Krista Kay, is like, "That's so mean." And he's like, he's got a show named Fat Guys at the Movies. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? He's right.
This is true.
I can't exactly get mad at you for that kind of a comment.
Yeah, you can't really argue with something like that. It's beyond logic.
Exactly.
It's just
But I am going to be on, I was on Cue the Film, a podcast, a couple weeks ago. They finally, released the episode I was on while I was on vacation. So we'll link up to that on the show notes.
Oh,
as
cool.
I'm going to be on again, talking about more Star Trek stuff in a couple weeks.
Oh, nice.
So keep that in mind.
They actually want you back?
They want me back, which blows my mind.
I thought I was the only one who would ever want to do a second show with you.
Yeah, like my wife, she doesn't even want me back, but I have three kids with her, so she kind of has
Yeah, she's kind of stuck with you.
Speaking of my kids, I took them to go see Ice Age 3. So I figured since we missed reviewing it last week because I was on vacation and you were doing your own shenanigans.
I'm doing research.
I figure we can do. Yeah, doing research into the mating habits of something
of internet journalists.
Okay, let's call it that. Okay, but anyways, we're gonna do two quick, real retro reviews. We're not even gonna have clips, but just about Ice Age 3, and you can talk a little bit about Public Enemies. I got to see Ice Age 3. Cute movie, and I liked it better than the second one because the second one I thought really stretched in terms of trying to give everybody a story.
Right.
This one does the same thing, and that's the problem whenever you get a movie that's a sequel and you got to have all these sort of disparate characters that they got to have something to do.
Right. The Queen Latifah, you got to have new characters that have to have something to do.
Well, the new characters are actually pretty awesome because the new character is a weasel that's sort of like a Crocodile Dundee character, and he's pretty cool, named Buck.
Who is he voiced by?
Like, you know what? I off the top of my head, I can't remember because I
oh isn't it Simon Pegg?
Is it Simon Pegg? Because it sounded like Ewan McGregor, but I didn't think it was
it's
him.
Simon
but it could
Pegg.
Be Simon.
Yeah, I know Simon Pegg's in that movie.
Oh, then it's probably him. Yeah, he's awesome in it, and they have dinosaurs, which is really cool because they got, you know, dinosaurs are always awesome in a movie, and it's in 3D. Like the character, the Diego character, which is done by Dennis Leary, he's mm-hmm. the saber-toothed cat. He's okay. He's just sort of forced in there. And then they do this, they sort of suffer from what I call the Frankenstein syndrome, where they do the first movie, then they do the bride of, then they do the son of. So it's like
right.
last movie, Manny got a girlfriend, then Manny got his girlfriend pregnant in this one. So now they're going to, you know, so they kind of go from significant other to kids, which is something they did in Shrek, and they've done this in other movies.
Right.
So that kind of, But and then Scrat falls in love, which is hilarious. That's the best part.
Well, yeah, that's the only thing I remember from the trailer, because it was like the whole trailer was like Scrat falling in love.
Scrat is the best. So I say Ice Age 3 kind of rocks, but if you're going to see it in 3D.
Cool. Well, and I have Public Enemies, which I saw before we went to vacation. And
did you say you have pubic enemies?
No, I have public with a
with
an L. Never mind. That's a topic.
Is that the L word that everyone talks about? Okay.
Yes. But this is Michael Mann's take on the story of John Dillinger. Johnny Depp plays John Dillinger. And let me just say this. I mean, it's an interesting movie. It was filmed in digital, so it's, you know, it's very much like Collateral in that it has this very unique look to it, and it looks, there are moments where this movie probably looks the best that any movie is going to look, that any drama is going to look on screen all year. Just from he gets some really just great shots, but then again, there's this sometimes now that I'm seeing with digital is that it gets a little too real, and the sound design is a little off at certain points. Like it goes way up and way down. So like there's gunfights where you literally, it feels like you're in the room, but it literally feels like you're sitting next to someone who's shooting a Tommy gun right next to your ear. So
is it kind of like Taken was in the
theaters? I didn't see Taken in the theater, so I don't really remember.
then you wouldn't remember at all because you didn't see it.
So I really can't comment. But but overall, I mean, it's a mediocre execution of a story at best. Johnny Depp is fantastic in it. I thought Christian Bale's performance, this is probably one of his better performances. in the last couple of years. It's much better than him as Batman, and way better than him in Terminator. You know, he actually shows a little bit of range, a little bit of depth, instead of just being angry all the time.
Did he show any depth or just depth?
No, he's just depth. And, you know, they kind of had a good chemistry on screen. And I tell you what, if you're a Johnny Depp fan, if you think Johnny Depp is sexy, this is your movie. Because
as you do.
You know what? Even I was attracted to Johnny Depp at some point in this movie. It's a very...
That's what I said about Hugh Jackman in Australia. I couldn't help it.
You just can't help.
He's a good-looking dude.
You can't help but be like, yeah, this guy's living it, man. He's living the dream. So it's kind of a cool movie. I'm giving it a kind of rocks because I don't really feel like it. The story's not tight enough to really kind of hold people in. But
Willy Wonka versus Batman is good enough, is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay. So, yeah, Willy Wonka versus Batman. That's cool. With a very awesome Dr. Manhattan moment where Billy Crudup plays J. Edgar Hoover, and he's like, yeah, see? We got these G-men, see? They're going to go down, and we're going to catch
up everybody with his mind.
Yes, yes. So it's it's Dr. Manhattan wearing women's underwear. Although they don't show him wearing women's underwear. But we all know J. Edgar Hoover did it, so. So, yeah.
And you're in D.C. You're Washington, D.C.
I know.
You're the nation's
capital. I feel
like the
Secret
Service
is going to roll up on me just for saying that. So, nice. Anyways, moving on.
Let's talk about the box office.
Oh, yes, let's talk about the box office.
Can we try to not talk about Transformers?
Let's just say that Transformers won again, dude.
Oh, yes. Well, you know.
And it's made $300 million. That's all you need to know. That movie, it's ultimately the great war between critics and fans. And it just goes to show how insignificant critics are these days.
No. Well, I've always said critics, it's not that they're insignificant. They're insignificant on a movie that people would expect them to. The only time critics really, really can affect the box office, if it's a movie that critics should love and they don't. No one expected critics to love Transformers.
Exactly.
So when you got bad reviews, people are like, well, big deal. It's Michael Bay. And
it's Transformers. What did you think was going to happen?
Or if it came out and say like had a big awesome action scene in the beginning and an awesome action scene at the end, and then it was them eating pudding through the rest of the movie, and people are like, "Wow, there was no action whatsoever." Critics would have done better to kill this movie if they would have wrote about it and said it was the most boring movie ever. There was no action in it, and just lied about it.
Right.
Then no one would have seen it because it would have been like, "Well, why would I see a Michael Bay movie without all the action?"
Right. Exactly.
No, this is the thing, and this is where I take issue with some people like you and Robert Fury from Film School Rejects. The movie wasn't awesome. It was good and it was fun. It just wasn't worthy of almost beating The Dark Knight. Like, the thing is, Dark Knight from top to bottom was a better movie no matter what. It had great action, but it also had a great story, had great characters, phenomenal acting, and it was so well put together. And this one was like when Fast and Furious came out and made $70 million in the weekend in April, which I'm like, Fast and Furious was a fun movie, but it wasn't worth $70 million on a weekend in April.
Right. And you know, it's, I will agree with you there. And it definitely didn't deserve to do Dark Knight business, but you know, hooray for it Paramount did. Marketing. Like, you know, they win this round.
They knew what they were doing. Yeah. But do you think Bruno's going to win this weekend?
You know, I think it is. I think, you know, Ice Age is going to be up there because it's still that one family film. Public Enemies only made $25 million last week. So I think Public Enemies will round out the top five. And it'll really be, I think it'll be Bruno, Transformers, Ice Age, Public Enemies, and then insert something here. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. I think Ice Age has a chance to beat Transformers this weekend.
Yeah, maybe.
But it may not. But they're going to be neck and neck. But I do think that Ice Age, Bruno is going to pull in the Hangover crowd.
There's enough controversy around that movie that
it'll get the dwindling Hangover crowd is what it's going to
be. Oh, totally. Yeah, I think the Hangover's going to drop, like, you know, major. But the Hangover, I mean, we're talking about a $200 million comedy here.
With nobody in it except Mike Tyson.
So, go Hangover.
Woohoo. Go Michael Bay. Go Hangover.
Yeah, dude.
All right.
Nice.
Hey, we only got a couple minutes left in this segment. Let's do the Fat Guy Five.
Sweet. I'm excited about this one because, you know me, I love space movies.
Yes.
So this is our five awesome space movies. I know that it's not like our five favorite. It's just five awesome space movies because we have Moon this week. So
we got Mooned.
We just thought it would be fun to tell you all about stuff. about space.
Okay, you want to start with the first one? Well, you start from the bottom up on this.
Start from the bottom up. I'm going with Space Camp. I need this one to be on there. I mean, we're talking about introducing Tate Donovan and the first
Kelly Preston.
And what's her name? She played the mom in Back to the Future. Leah Thompson. And
Kate Capshaw was in it.
Kate Capshaw was in it. Also,
Mrs. Spielberg.
Joaquin Phoenix, before his name was Joaquin, when his name was Leaf Phoenix. Yes. He played the little boy. Because
he wanted to get, a better name.
Right, right. Also, I mean, after his brother River died, I mean, they didn't go together anymore, River and Leaf. But
no. What? Okay.
So Joaquin.
Let
was
me
the
move
next.
On because we're running out of
time.
Yeah.
But I love Space Camp. Space Camp is like total guilty pleasure for me. Yeah, love it.
For me, if you could put Space Camp on, I could put The Last Starfighter on, which stars. I don't even know who this kid is, but he was. He was a kid. He's a nerdy kid who was great at playing a video game. And what it was is the video game is basically a way to test candidates to become starfighters.
Yeah.
And it's a fantastic movie. Just crazy special effects for the time. They look like they're a video game now. They look really retro, but they were incredible at the time. It's a fun, action-y kind of outer space movie that every kid's dream to be suddenly tapped by an elite academy from outer space to become a space pilot.
Nice.
So, you want me to take this next one?
You can
one?
Take that. You know, I don't think I can do the next one justice like you can.
Well, I'm going to have to say you can't have a space movie without Star Wars. Star Wars redefined space movies in the late 70s. Before that, they were all like sort of like Rocky Jones and the Mole Men from Mars and stuff like that. Star Wars is such a seminal piece. It's probably has a greater impact on space movies than even like Star Trek or something like that. And you say what you want to about the sequels and the prequels, Star Wars was the best movie of that year. Annie Hall robbed it at the Oscars, and it made a career not just for like George Lucas, but everybody else involved with it.
Fair enough. The next pick on my list is Apollo 13. And this actually kind of goes in conjunction with the HBO miniseries From the Earth to the Moon, which I believe is the single greatest like thing ever about like real space travel. But Apollo 13, just great. Just fantastic. Tom Hanks, Ron Howard. You know the story.
Yes.
Incredible, incredible movie.
Houston, we have a problem.
We do.
The next one we'll do. I'm gonna do this because my first son was born in 2001, so I have a little bit of a soft spot for 2001, A Space Odyssey, which we've way past 2001. That was 8 years ago, but it's still a fantastic movie. And it was like Star Wars in the sense that it redefined the space genre, because before that, everything was really cheesy. It was a ridiculously expensive movie. They thought it was going to bankrupt MGM. It took a little longer for that to happen, but it was a phenomenal success, and it was a real true vision of what space travel would be like.
Yeah, and then finally, before we go to break, The Right Stuff and Spaceballs are honorable mentions, definitely.
And Spaceballs, just getting a jump on the DVD segment, they've come out with a Blu-ray of Spaceballs, which has awesome Blu-ray features. What's neat about it is they have commentary tracks by Moggies and Dinkies.
Yeah.
So, like, everyone's going, ding, 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 ding.
Oh, wow. We'll be right back. And we're back here on Fat Guys at the Movies once again.
Yay.
We're wrapping you up. And now that we've talked about space movies, which is fun because I love space movies, it is time, once again, for the world-famous DVD Roundup. Ooh, wow, still got it. Nice.
Yes, and we still got in the world-famous mode that you're going to do your one or two, and then I'll plow through a bevy, because I got 2 weeks to talk about, because since we didn't talk about releases.
Well, mine are pretty easy, and I just saw which one of yours, and I'm probably going to murder you via Skype because of one of yours. I can't even believe you put it on there.
No, I know what you're talking about.
Uh-huh.
And there's a
reason. No, it's not the one you think. Anyways.
Oh, both of them.
mine are Push and Knowing, two Summit Pictures releases, two early year releases, two kind of sci-fi films, and both are very cool movies. Both, especially if you get them on Blu-ray, they look good on Blu-ray. They got a lot of cool special features. And I thought Knowing was a lot better movie than people gave it credit for. Like,
Knowing
sure,
was a great movie.
It's Nick Cage, but Alex Proyas, man, he really... It's kind of a cool movie. It gets a little weird at the end, but, you know, a lot of movies get a little weird at the end. And then I thought Push was really kind of the movie that, like, Heroes fans should have liked, because it was essentially a movie about people with powers who actually use their powers and stuff. And, you know... And
that actually has a beginning, middle, and end, and doesn't just peter out and go to the next series.
Right. So I feel like, you know, I feel like Push was a lot of fun. It was a lot... It really was a much better movie than it should have been, based on the cast and all that stuff. I mean, I thought it was... It's kind of a cool film. So, I mean, especially if you're looking for a rental for the weekend. I would, either one of those is an easy choice. So,
okay.
All right, go ahead.
Let me start with last week so you can go after me with Venom and everything. The first one I want to talk about, these were last week's releases. The first one, Do the Right Thing. Even though I'm not a big fan of it, I thought it was somewhat of the mixed message kind of movie. It's well known for being Spike Lee's one of his best films. It also launched the careers of Rosie Perez and Martin Lawrence. Mm-hmm. And even Sam Jackson had an early role in this. The list of names in this movie is phenomenal, especially if you look at it 20 years later. And the Blu-ray is incredible because usually they'll say, 4 hours of special features, and it's because they put in three commentary tracks.
Right.
This one literally has 4 hours of special features in addition to the two commentary tracks. It's got documentaries of the making of it. It's got a retrospective 20 years later. And Spike Lee loves documentaries, so he totally immerses himself.
He directs his own documentaries for his own movies.
Yes, so that's pretty cool. And there's also Stargate Season 5, Stargate Atlantis Season 5, rather, the last season of Stargate Atlantis on DVD. Awesome movie, awesome way to end the series. Looking forward to Stargate Universe this fall. There's also, and these kind of come in a two, 12 rounds in Street Fighter. They're not the Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li. Is that the one you're going to go after me?
Yeah, that was an awful movie, man. Why would you even think about it?
This is why. If you get the Blu-ray of both movies, they are so loaded with special features that if you're sort of like a DVD Blu-ray hound, it's kind of cool. They have a lot of stuff. Because there's some things on there, some releases where you're just like, it was just the movie and deleted scenes. It's not worth even compressing it into a Blu-ray format. Mm-hmm. But both of these had enough special features. And the only reason I put Street Fighter on there is because it has an extra disc with sort of an animated movie to go along with it, give you the background. So if you didn't like that movie, you get another shot with this animated backup movie.
Whatever, man.
And then just to mention the Jonas Brothers, because if you didn't get to see them be really sexy, you can do it at home without the Screaming Girls. But then again, you like those Screaming Girls. My ones for this week, The Unborn was okay, but it looks good on DVD. It's actually better on home video on Blu-ray because it's scarier and it has some more crazy scenes in it. And there's also the Peanuts 1960s collection, all the old Charlie Brown bits from the television specials from the 60s. And then Night Train, which is kind of this nothing little movie that came out of nowhere, and it's kind of like a Twilight Zone episode. It runs a little long, and they take too long to do it. It really has got about 40 minutes of story. Mm-hmm. But it's a neat story about these people stuck on a train trying to hide a dead body. And there's a little more to it than that, and there's some supernatural elements.
Dead bodies on a train. Awesome.
It's a cool movie. I put it in, I'm like, oh, and this is going to suck. And then I watched it, I'm like, this is actually pretty cool.
Right. Gotcha.
So,
okay.
And Reba Season 6 was awesome. I just watched that over break. So that's to you for making fun of me two weeks ago.
I have nothing to say to you.
It was a funny show. It's a funny, funny show.
Hey, speaking of funny shows, what's our stinker of the week?
Murder, She Wrote, the complete 10th season. Because if there's, say an average of 20 episodes per season, that's 200 dinner parties she's gone to and somebody's died. Why does this woman even get invited anywhere? Would you invite Jessica Fletcher to your wedding?
No, because
somebody would die.
Yeah, I think that's a good...
So there.
Yeah.
Review wrap-up.
This really... I don't even know what to say anymore. Street Fighter and the Jonas Brothers. Gosh. All right, so let's wrap up the reviews. We'll start with the big movie of the week.
It's not my full picks. It's just sort of a roundup.
It's everything
telling
you
what's all
out
there.
We all know it.
Well, okay, there you go.
All right, let's move on.
I'm not going to promote something I got to buy unless I really, really love it.
Wow. Bruno, what did you think of Bruno?
Loved it. It was totally rocks.
And we both saw Moon, and I said totally rocks.
I said rocks.
And I Love You, Beth Cooper. We're just kind of guessing that it's going to be whatever.
Yeah.
We didn't see
it. I can't really give a preemptive suck because I had a little bit of an opportunity to see it. And I didn't.
Yes. Next week, we'll hopefully all be seeing Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. And in the meantime, you can get a hold of us at fatguysthemovies.com. You can get us over on iTunes. Just go to the iTunes store and search Fat Guys the Movies. You can email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. And get us on Facebook now, facebook.com/fatguysthemovies. And you get all Kevin Carr all day long. It'll be great.